episodes deal with serious and often distressing events. If you or someone you know is suffering, don't hesitate to reach out to your local crisis center. Please see the show notes for this episode for suggested links and numbers to confidential assistance, and a more detailed list of content warnings, available via your streaming app or the website. Thank you. Welcome back, everyone. I hope you enjoy. So, get comfy and prepare yourself for another episode of
The Nightmare Society.
This past New Year's was mine and my boyfriend's 4-year anniversary. We typically don't do much, so this year we decided to make it special by planning a romantic getaway. At the time, the two of us were living in Seattle and wanted to rent a cabin in a snowy small town for the weekend. We found a cabin on Airbnb with a hot tub, and we were sold. The cabin was, of course, the last house on the road. To get to it, you had to drive down a small, removed, private road that ended in a roundabout. Off the roundabout was a long, uphill driveway leading up to our cabin. We got to the cabin and it was snowy and beautiful. The cabin itself sat on top of a garage and you needed to take the stairs on the back side of the property to get into the front door. When we got inside, there was a booklet with all the cabin's info outlined. The book said that during the snowy season, don't be surprised if their contracted snowplowers showed up to clear off the driveway. Okay, sounds good. We unpacked and realized that there was no service on either of our phones, but the booklet told us there was a landline in the cabin if we needed anything. We spent the first night by the fire playing board games and drinking wine. The weekend was exactly what we needed. We planned to spend the next day in town, and that night I had booked us a reservation for a nice dinner. We were gone almost all day, only returning briefly to get dressed up to enjoy some good food. Dinner was great, and we were excited to head back to the cabin for some champagne hot tubbing. While at dinner, the temperature had dropped and it snowed for the first time that day, coating everything in a fresh layer of powder. We drove down the private road and got to the driveway. At that point, my boyfriend stopped the car, headlights shining out in front, and asked if I noticed the new tire tracks. I looked at the driveway, hoping to quickly disregard the new tracks, but there they were. Immediately, we remembered that the snowplowers could have stopped by, but the issue was that we saw the tracks because of the snow, and who plows in the dark? We also knew that once we were at the cabin, we had no service on our cell phones, so we figured we would head back to town and message our Airbnb host and ask them if one of their friends had stopped by the apartments. We waited for a while in town for a reply from our hosts, but didn't hear back. We could have called at that point, but it was past 10 and we didn't want to be bad guests. We figured we blew the whole thing out of proportion and might as well head back to the cabin. After all, I am big into true crime, spooky subreddits, and horror movies, so I was probably just psyching myself out. My boyfriend drove us back, and this time we actually drove up the driveway. Towards the top of the hill on part of the driveway, I noticed something. My stomach dropped as I noticed footprints on the property. We backed down the driveway and took a closer look to see if there were more footprints. From what it looked like, someone had drove up the driveway, reversed down, parked, and then got out of the car and walked onto the property. Since we had now also driven on the tracks, we couldn't find where the footprints ended. The property was quite large with tons of trees and brush, and we knew that these footprints could go anywhere. The moment we saw footprints, we decided to call the police. We figured it was better safer than sorry, and then we would just have the police officer go up to the property with us to check everything out. We drove down the road till we got service, called the police, and waited for their arrival. The policeman showed up and we followed him onto the property. The police officer scanned the property and determined there was no one out there. Obviously, we are a little shaken up and a lot embarrassed. We thanked the officer and he left. Needless to say, neither one of us wanted to sit in the hot tub in the dark woods after what had happened. Instead, we locked the doors and watched a movie, champagneless. We were both tired from the day and passed out pretty quickly. At 3 a.m., we both woke up on the couch with the TV on and all the lights, laughing about how the night didn't turn out as planned. As my boyfriend went to brush his teeth, we heard a noise. It sounded mechanical and only lasted a few seconds. We looked at each other and froze. The garage door. There are very few reasons that someone would need to open the garage door of a guest-occupied Airbnb at 3 in the morning. Like I said, we woke up to all of our lights on, and the cabin had a lot of windows. We knew that if someone was outside, they knew that we were there, and they could see us. I immediately grabbed the landline and dialed 911. We sat crouched in the Airbnb, praying for the police to arrive. We knew that whoever had made those tracks was still on the property, and this time they were making noise. As I sat down talking to the operator, we heard a big bang in our balcony, as if someone threw something up onto it. I was losing my absolute mind when the operator told me the police were nearby. All of a sudden, they were there. We saw the police lights and watched them search the property. Soon, we heard banging on the door. It was the police. We were okay. At the door were two policemen, one in front of us and one a little behind, kind of kicking around snow and looking at the ground. I immediately noticed a police officer in the back as the officer that did the initial check on the property. The officer told us that not only was the garage door shut, but it was locked. And again, there was no signs of someone on the property. We discussed leaving, but the police officer said the road conditions were too dangerous that time of night. I looked at the police officer who had come to the property earlier and felt I had deeply disappointed him. My boyfriend and I went back inside, again locking all the doors and trying to sleep. The next day we were leaving, and while we survived the night, I didn't feel right in the cabin anymore. It was forever the spooky cabin in my head, and I wanted to leave. As we packed up, we heard the same noise we heard at 3 a.m. Oh, it was the heater? A heater that sounds just like the garage and lasts the same amount of time. My boyfriend looked at me and said, "You need to give up your murder shows," and walked away. As if. But whoever drove onto the property and walked around, we can't account for that. And thank you for triggering all of my nightmares. Please stay home and, let's not meet. Honestly, I never hear anyone talk about it seriously, but living in a small town seems to make people cruel. Maybe it's just the sheer boredom that brings out the worst in people. I grew up in a rural Texas town with a crippling meth problem. No positive outlets for people to do activities, like a movie theater or a park. And we didn't even have a large grocery store to just hang out in. The teens mostly just ended up drinking, driving, and going to bonfires. But quite a few of the teenage boys in my neighborhood decided that being evil was the best way to have fun. They would literally go out of their way driving to swerve and try to scare younger kids riding bikes, or poison loose dogs, and even set fire to a few of the trailers in my neighborhood while people were still in them. Only one arrest was ever made in connection to the arsons, but it had definitely been a group activity. My neighborhood was a trailer park in which each trailer was placed on a few acres of land with at least some forested area between each plot of property. The road was an older dirt road with gravel and rocks poured over the dirt, which is what I had to learn to ride a bike on. it was difficult. One day when I was around 10, I was doing my best to ride the bike on this rock road without falling while riding away from my house, when I saw my older sister, who was about 16 at the time, sprinting alongside the road towards me from the opposite direction. I was going very slow, trying to keep my balance, but decided to just get off the bike when I noticed how panicked my sister looked. I saw a dust cloud coming from the road, but a fairly large hill was blocking the view of my sister and I from any vehicles that were coming towards us on the other side. When my sister got to me, she grabbed my arm so hard that I winced in pain, and she pulled me away from the bike. By this time, the truck that was producing the dust trail was just coming over the hill, but was still fairly far away, so I didn't think they noticed us. There are woods around 10 feet off both sides of the road where I was, and my sister was pulling me into the woods on the left side of the road. I complied, but was asking her what was happening. She just told me to hurry. We made it about 30 feet into the woods when my sister dropped to the ground and pulled me with her. She covered my mouth and told me to be quiet. I complied. I saw that the vehicle she was worried about was a black truck filled with five guys that were in their late teens or early 20s. The truck screeched to a stop right where my bike was. I froze solid when I heard my sister whisper, "Oh crap." Three of the guys got out of their car, but didn't say anything. It was clear that they were looking very intensely into the woods on both sides of the road. Luckily, for some reason I am not sure of, they all lined up and started approaching and walking into the woods on the opposite side of the road. They were talking, but we couldn't make out what they were saying. I was worried that they would take their time looking for us, since only a handful of people lived this far down the road, and it could have taken hours before another car would pass through. It took about 5 minutes of perfect stillness and silence before one did. Thankfully, one of the guys had already placed my bike in the back of the truck when they noticed another car coming down the hill behind them. They quickly jumped in the truck and sped off. We waited there for probably 10 more minutes before we stood up and started to walk back home, although we walked right along the tree line instead of the road itself, just in case. My sister didn't say much to me, but told my mom when we got home that one of the boys that she'd been hanging out with was talking about wanting to kill some of the annoying kids in the neighborhood, and she assumed it was a good bet that one of those annoying kids might end up being one of her three younger siblings. It could have been any of us, but I was the one that wanted to go ride my bike alone that day, instead of playing video games with my two brothers. She decided to head home when none of the other guys seemed to go against the guy talking about wanting to kill kids, or even jokingly escalate his desire to kill annoying kids with more details. She had been running home and got just enough of a head start to stop whatever they might have done before they got in their truck and started heading that way. The cops were informed, but apparently the boys disagreed and a parent claimed they never left the trailer, so nothing ever came of it. I knew two of the boys' names because we lived in the same neighborhood in a small town, and I know they never got less evil. They later invited my sister to a bonfire party that everyone was going to be at, supposedly, but my sister decided not to go, and when she asked all of her friends how the party was, literally, no one knew about it. That is because she was the only one invited. She stayed away from them forever since, and fortunately, neither one of us still lives there anymore. Of the two that I knew, one is currently incarcerated for several drug-related offenses, but the other is still out there. As for the other three that were in the truck, I have no idea where they are or what they're up to. So to the garbage boys in the truck, you can keep my bike, because I hope we never meet again. This happened back in 2004 in northern Wisconsin. I was 16 at the time and out deer hunting with my dad and a friend of his, Frank. I do remember this day like it was yesterday. The dialogue isn't word for word, but the idea of it is 100% accurate. As a side note, it was one day after 8 people were shot less than 2 hours away. A link to the murder for reference is in the show notes. My dad and I had a few different stands over an area of 3/4 of a square mile. We had been hunting there for at least 10 years, and I had been going with him since I was 5. Up until I was 12, the legal age to hunt with a rifle, I had just been tagging along. This particular morning, we walked to my stand first. It was about 5 a.m., so still dark outside. I got situated and my dad and Frank went off to 2 other stands over a ridge, maybe another 500 to 600 yards off. Sitting there in the dark is always a little eerie. Not long after my dad and Frank left, I see a flashlight from the general direction of where they headed, maybe 200 yards away, roughly moving my direction. I figured they forgot something from the truck or something, so I radioed to see what they were doing. They said they were sitting in their stand and Frank was about to head to the other one. Obviously, the flashlight is someone else. This isn't super uncommon, and it's not really a big deal. Those woods get crowded sometimes, and there's a spot to park in that general direction. I turn on my light so the other hunter can see that there is someone there. He stops. I see the light turn and go a different direction. No big deal. I end up dozing off while it's still dark. When I wake up, the sun is up, around 8 a.m. I sit there for a bit, radio my dad to see if he has heard or seen anything moving. Nothing yet. A couple of gunshots off in the distance is all. I get up and go for a slow little walk to get my blood moving. Not far, maybe 30 yards out and back, trying not to make a sound. I come back to my stand, sit down and take a real good look around. Nothing really going on. I finally look out to my left, where I had seen the flashlight before, and see orange. For anyone unfamiliar, hunters have to wear a blaze orange during gun season. I radio my dad and Frank to see if either one of them were moving around. Dad says no. I hear nothing from Frank. I grab the binoculars out of my backpack to see if it's Frank. It's definitely not. This guy is looking at me through his scope. Rifle aimed directly freaking at me. This is a huge no-no. This is a massively important rule we all learn in hunter's education. Never ever point your rifle at something you do not intend to shoot. Dumb people still do it though. It's few and far between, but it does happen. This is why normal people use binoculars. My first thought was, what a freaking idiot. Thing is, even with me looking at him, he doesn't put his gun down. Now I'm starting to panic, thinking I'm going to be the next hunting murder victim. I slowly grab my rifle, get up, staying behind as many trees as I can, and walk down a little path to the side of my stand. My stand was on this kind of little knoll on the side of a much larger hill. I radio my dad, tell him what's up. He tells me to sit tight and stay out of sight. Obviously, as a 16-year-old, I could not do that, and had to keep looking. I had to keep looking. Every time I looked, the guy was still aiming my direction, but was always standing in a different spot. Like I would look, go back to hiding, look again, and he would be 30 yards from where he was the last time. About 10 minutes of this goes by when my dad radios me and asks me how I'm doing. Looking back, he was very obviously trying to keep me calm. At the time, I thought he just wasn't taking me seriously. I told him that he's still there, but he keeps moving, and I don't know what his problem is. My dad tells me just to keep hidden and he'll figure it out, that he'll be coming up near him in a minute or two. That's when I hear the shot. And that's when I crapped my pants. Losing my mind trying to get a hold of my dad. Did he just get shot? Where the heck is he? Did he have to shoot the guy? What the heck is going on? I sit there for maybe 2 to 3 minutes that felt like hours. He radios me back and says, "All right, come on out and head toward my stand." I peek up over the little knoll I was behind and see my dad waving from along the ridge, the one that the random guy had been on. I made the trek over to him to see what happened. Turns out Frank was feeling a little restless and took a little stroll and ended up on the other side of that particular ridge the stranger was on, not knowing he was there. He had knocked his radio battery loose while he was getting situated earlier in the morning and had no idea anything was even going on. The shot I heard was actually Frank shooting a deer. Dad said as soon as Frank shot, the guy walked off away from us toward the logging road. We helped Frank out with his deer and decided to call it an early day. Although I was extremely nervous, the rest of the week went on with no incidents. So, to the very strange stranger in the woods with a rifle pointed at me, and with no common sense, let's never meet again. Thanks so much for listening, and until next time.
Sweet dreams.